Welcome to A Teaspoon of Healing. I'm your host, Dawn Damari. Hi, I'm Dawn Damari, and you're listening to another episode of A Teaspoon of Healing. Today, I have a guest with me, Caitlin Gates. Caitlin is a registered nurse and an insomnia coach. Hi, Caitlin.
Hi, Dawn. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for joining me today on the podcast. And before we talk a little bit about your history with insomnia, do you mind sharing a little bit about your background, your education, and the work you do with our listeners?
Yeah, of course. As you already mentioned, I am a registered nurse. I used to work in home health. And after we moved to Hawaii, I stopped nursing. I didn't transfer my license, and I focused solely on insomnia coaching.
So insomnia, really excited about this interview. I was really excited about it because so many people struggle with it, and including me. And I'll talk about that a little bit later. But what is your history with insomnia? I know from reading your bio that you struggled with it for several years. So do you mind sharing a little bit about your story with insomnia with our listeners?
Yeah, of course. So starting from middle school, a long time ago, I've always had trouble sleeping. I used to be up all night, only get a couple hours sleep, and then I would have to go to school and I would fall asleep during class. It's quite an issue. My parents used to call me their little night owl, and they would buy me all these like watches and clothes with owls on it because I just didn't sleep at night. I don't remember anyone ever trying to get me help with sleep or anything, but it just kind of developed over time and got worse and worse. I used to sleep every 3-4 days. I would only get a couple hours sleep. No sleep during those 3 or 4 days. 0 hours. And then on the days I did sleep, I got a 2-3 hours. At that point, that's when I started going to sleep doctors. I did CBTI. I tried sleep medications. I did Chinese medicine. I saw naturopaths and did everything. And just nothing seemed to work until 30 years later. It took me 30 years to overcome insomnia.
Wow. Wow. That's quite a lot of years. And I get it, because when I remember being 7 years old and being nervous about taking a test the next morning and not being able to sleep, or 7 or 8 years old. That's ridiculous. So I relate to that. So you said you tried a lot of different things. You tried Chinese medicine, you tried sleep doctors. So were there any other things that you tried that just didn't work?
Just lots of supplements, multiple sleep doctors. I did three rounds of CBTI, which is supposed to be the gold standard. That didn't work for me. Meditation, binaural beats. I tried everything. If it exists, I tried it. Hypnosis. I remember seeing someone for hypnosis. I can't remember what else, but if it exists, I've tried it probably.
A lot of people probably relate to that because they've probably tried, because when you can't sleep, it become desperate. You just really want that sleep because you can't function. And so I'm sure a lot of people relate to trying things. So what happened? What finally clicked? What finally worked for you?
So over the many years of working with different sleep doctors, none of them being able to help me, I finally contacted someone that was so different from every other sleep doctor and person I talked to. And what they were saying just made so much sense. Like something finally, like it made sense. So I started working with him, doing everything that he taught me. And just slowly over time, I started sleeping more.
That's wonderful. And obviously, I'm assuming that it completely transformed your life. Just being able to sleep. Sleep is so crucial for us.
It is.
So Caitlin, how did you find the root cause of your insomnia?
Yeah. So I guess the way I'll approach this is the way I teach it to my clients is disrupted sleep versus insomnia, because these two are often very confused. So there are thousands of things that can cause disrupted sleep, like hormones, menopause, medication side effects, stress that's going on in life, trauma. Anything can cause disrupted sleep. You're losing that quality of sleep. You're losing some sleep. But that's not insomnia yet. what happens is when you have this disrupted sleep, let's use the example of something really stressful going on in your life. You're not getting good sleep because of the stress. If you react with, okay, this is normal. This happens when you have a lot of stress in life. I'm just going to practice some extra self-care. And then I will get through the day. It will correct itself as the stress resolves, start as the stress comes down. Your sleep will get better. But if you react with, oh my gosh, I lost some sleep. This isn't okay. This can't happen. I got to take a pill. I got to take melatonin. I'm going to take a supplement. I'm going to do this, do that, try to stop it. Your brain starts to think there is danger. This is how we get stuck in insomnia, because anytime we fear something and we're trying to escape it, no matter what it is, your brain thinks there's danger and it's trying to keep you safe. So it's activating the fight or flight system, which is keeping you awake at night. This is a safety mechanism. Your brain's doing exactly what it's supposed to do, even though you don't want to be awake at night. It wants you to be awake, alert. It doesn't want you to get into a deep sleep in case you need to react to whatever the danger is out there, even though there really isn't a danger. So when it comes to the root cause of insomnia, it all comes down to our reactions to the sleeplessness, that fear, and trying to escape it. That's what keeps us stuck. And we keep losing more and more sleep. And then we become more and more fearful. And we try to escape even more. And then it just continues on and on and on.
And that being fearful, that's really resonating, because that's something I've noticed when I wake up in the middle of the night, or like, you know, falling asleep and then I wake up and it's 3 a.m. and then just being fearful that I'm not going to fall back asleep, or fearful about, whoa, no, how am I going to feel the next day? Or am I ever going to sleep again? I really, really relate to that. And that's a big part of it.
Absolutely.
So interesting. Now, sleep studies, I think you had mentioned that you had done one of those or had done several. So are these worth it? I know some people probably benefit from it, but what do you think if you don't have something like sleep apnea or another underlying medical condition that's causing the insomnia?
Well, I think it's always important to get a sleep study, get tested for sleep apnea, because your sleep issues could be coming from sleep apnea or something underlying that you don't know about. But if you already know that you don't have any of that, then if you have insomnia, it's not something physical that needs to be fixed. It's all going to come down to your reactions to the sleeplessness and that fear that's keeping you stuck.
Absolutely. So find out if you actually do have sleep apnea, because then that's an underlying condition that it's pretty serious too, to get that diagnosed, treated. But if you don't, like you said, it's usually not a physical issue. It's within the mind. And I think that's just going to help so many people. So now there's different, I don't know if it's, I would say not different types of insomnia. I guess what I was trying to say is some people have trouble falling asleep and some people have trouble staying asleep. Some people probably have trouble with both. For example, I'll just talk from my experience. I have no problem falling asleep, especially if I'm really tired. But then I'll wake up 4 hours later or 5.5 hours. And if it's 6 hours, I think, okay, maybe I've gotten enough sleep. But if I wake up at 3 and I've only gotten about 4 hours sleep, well, do you have any tips for that? Should you stay in bed? Should you get up and read on the couch? I've heard so many different theories about what you should do if you can't stay asleep.
Yeah, absolutely. So when it comes to insomnia, whether it's onset insomnia, trouble falling asleep, or maintenance insomnia, trouble staying asleep, it's going to be the same thing, because it's the hyperarousal that's keeping you awake. And oftentimes when people wake up in the middle of the night, they start to feel like, oh my gosh, am I going to be able to fall back asleep? As you mentioned earlier, that happens with you. That's the fear that's triggering your brain to think there's danger and activating the fight or flight system. So for anyone who wakes up in the middle of the night and has trouble staying asleep, the biggest tip I can say is don't resist it. Don't try to fight it. Don't try to stop it, because we actually can't make ourselves sleep. I know it seems like it, like you can take a pill and it's going to make sleep happen, but sleep happens passively. And the more you resist it, the more stressed out you're going to be, the more your hyperarousal is going to be up and it's going to keep you awake and you're going to lose even more sleep just by resisting it. So if you could allow it to happen, and remember, it all comes down to fear. The more you fear it, the more sleep you're going to lose, the more you're going to get stuck. What I usually have my clients do is do something they enjoy. Read a book, draw. I even have people watch TV shows. I know that sounds crazy because you're not supposed to be on electronics an hour or two before bed, but I can talk about that a little bit more. But, instead of resisting it and getting stressed and frustrated, you can do something you enjoy. Take your focus off your sleep. Watch a funny TV show. Maybe you're going to laugh a little or draw or whatever it is that you enjoy doing. Listen to a podcast like this podcast right here. And then when you were talking about whether you should get out of bed or not. Mm-hmm. So what I teach is not to get out of bed.
Okay.
It's not the association with a bed that's keeping us awake, with being awake in bed. It's the fear of not getting sleep, the fear of struggling. So if you can face your fear and show your brain that you are safe by not fearing it, you're going to teach your brain that you're safe and you're going to start to get more sleep with time.
That's really interesting. So stay in bed. Do you recommend doing any breathing exercises, like deep belly breathing, any type of, I think I heard somewhere say like close, you know, keep your eyes open, closed. But I like to hear that you stay in bed because that is what I usually do. And it usually ends up working. Sometimes it takes an hour, but usually I don't wake up. I'm glad to hear that at least I'm going down the right path there.
Yes, absolutely. You were talking about the deep breathing and stuff.
Yes.
So when we're in danger, our breath speeds up and our muscles get really tight. Yes. So part of what I have my clients do is either get some movement to help relax the muscles, or do like, I know this isn't the breathing, but I'm getting there, squeezing the muscles and releasing them, just loosening up those muscles and then slowing down your breath and taking deep breaths. That can be really helpful to show your brain that you are safe.
Oh, great. So it does work then because it gets you kind of into that parasympathetic state where you're relaxing rather than, again, when you're in fear, you're kind of in fight or flight, and that's not going to help you when you're trying to sleep.
Exactly.
It's definitely not going to help you. Your body's gearing up to, you know, run away from something or fight something. Okay. Exactly. Okay. And you had mentioned the electronics before bed and the blue light. And I know there's a lot of messaging about how this is actually not good for sleep before bed. But then again, you had mentioned sometimes it's not a bad idea too. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So I know this is a very controversial topic, but I want you to picture two different people. Well, yeah, two different people, the same exact insomnia, same struggles with sleep. You have one person who's awake. They're frustrated. They can't sleep. They're trying to take a pill. They're trying to do everything. They're trying to make sleep happen. They're staying off their electronics and doing everything they're supposed to do, getting out of bed, probably getting up in and out of bed, getting frustrated because they're not falling asleep. And then you have the person who maybe they pull out their iPad and they watch a comedy, watch something funny. They're not focused on trying to make sleep happen. They're maybe laughing a little because the comedy is funny. They're more relaxed. They're not stressing out. Their hyper arousal is down. Yes, the electronics, the blue light, and the stimulation does delay your sleep a little bit, but they far make up for that with how relaxed they are, with the hyperarousal being down. They're showing their brain that they're safe because they're not resisting being awake. I did this exactly when I had insomnia. Every single night, I would watch my iPad. I'd watch something funny, something light. And then before I knew it, I'd fall asleep while I'm watching the show.
That's great. Well, I really liked hearing that because It usually doesn't affect me when I fall asleep. I can sometimes read something boring online. Sometimes that helps me fall asleep. So that's really interesting. Now, what else can people do to fight that fear? So you mentioned a few things, and if they don't work, are there any other things that they can do?
Just fighting the fear, there's a lot of things we do besides showing your brain that you aren't resisting it. You aren't resisting being awake. You aren't fighting it. You're just enjoying yourself, staying relaxed. Then your brain doesn't see the fear. We do a lot of reframing fear-based thoughts. So my clients will list out all their fears, their worries, all the pressure that they put on themselves to get sleep, and then reframe them to something a little more positive, something that feels a little bit better to them. And they do this every single day. They reframe their thoughts, and it helps to bring down that fear when you start to look at things in a different way.
Interesting. So it comes down to looking at it in a different way, not fighting it, not worrying about it. And when your brain feels that, oh, I'm enjoying myself, I'm relaxed, it goes away, it melts away. Exactly. It's really just mind over matter, kind of tricking your brain, tricking your brain to thinking, it's okay, it's okay. And that, I think that's going to be so life-changing for people. I can imagine it's so life-changing for your clients.
It was life-changing for me.
Yeah, it's incredible. Now, what about people, now when you're working a night shift, you know, you're a registered nurse, so I'm not sure if you ever had to work night shift. Night shifts, when you have to sleep during the day, or what I think is probably worse is the alternating shifts. When you have a day shift, and then a swing shift, and then a night shift, and you're not really getting a consistent time, you know what I mean, for sleeping. Yeah. So what about for anyone that's has a schedule like that?
I am so grateful I didn't have a schedule like that.
Oh,
I
good for you. Thank goodness.
To work in the hospitals as a nurse, you had to start off working as in a night shift, mm-hmm. or you could work in a day shift. You had to work your, like, get more seniority to have the day shift. And
right.
I just refused because I already had insomnia at that point, and I did not want to mess up my sleep any more than it already is. But yeah, there are definitely some tips. Keeping a consistent routine as much as possible. You got to treat the night like you would if it was daytime. Having the same bedtime, having the same wake up time, getting light exposure when you are awake. And then when you have some disrupted sleep, same exact tips apply. Not resisting that disrupted sleep. Do something you enjoy if you can't sleep. But it mainly comes down to keeping that same routine and getting light exposure so that you can optimize your sleep.
So it really seems like it comes down to the pretty much the same thing. Yeah. It doesn't really matter what time you're sleeping, but just getting that consistent light exposure and probably, again, tricking your brain to thinking everything's fine, everything's fine.
Exactly.
And it's really great that you didn't have to start out with the night shift. Good for you. Because some people enjoy those hours. They say it's quieter, but I just think it's just so unnatural for our bodies.
Exactly.
We're programmed to sleep, you know, when it's dark. That's just how we've evolved. So your services now, you are an insomnia coach, and it sounds like you work with people pretty much anywhere. I know you're based in Hawaii, but it sounds like you work with people pretty much anywhere.
Yeah, all my services are online. I have an 8-week program called the Sleep Makeover. It's self-paced. They can go whatever speed they want, but I have it set up as 8 weeks. And I just work with them directly throughout the program from all the way till they're overcome insomnia. And they have one-on-one options as well, but it's not needed.
Oh, great. And so how can people get in touch with you to work with you?
So I have a website, www.caitlingates.com. Caitlin is spelled K-A-T-E-L-I, not Y-N, Gates, G-A-T-S.com.
Oh, great. So they can reach you there and they can work with you and all the different options. So do you have any advice that we haven't really covered? I did want to actually ask one other thing. So what do you think about the smartwatch and like your Apple Watch or different kinds of smartwatches tracking your sleep. I actually haven't done that because I feel like that would probably keep me awake because I'd just be thinking about it. But is that pretty helpful?
No, get rid of them.
That's what I figured. I felt like maybe if you had sleep apnea, it could detect something and then you could, you know, go to a doctor and get a sleep study. But I think other than that, okay. So I was thinking on the right path then. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they aren't very accurate to start with. Okay. I used to have one when I had insomnia. And when I would lay there awake, just lay there still, it would think I'm in a deep sleep. Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, no, I was wide awake. It's not accurate determining like what percentage of your night was in each phase of the sleep. Just seeing the low scores only adds stress. It adds pressure. It's not going to help you in any way. What are you going to do with this data? There's nothing you can do with it. We can't make sleep happen. We can't control sleep. It's passive. It just adds a lot of stress that I don't think we need. And they're not accurate at all. Not very accurate, I should say.
Well, that's interesting. So I've heard that people will wake up and it'll say, oh, my watch said I slept pretty good. I didn't feel like I did. So it seems like it's actually recording some times when you're sleeping. It's actually recording times when, like you said, when you're just laying there with your eyes open. As long as you're relaxed, it thinks you're sleeping.
Exactly. Yeah, I teach my clients to just go by how they feel. How do they feel when they wake up? How do they feel throughout the day? How's their energy? Now, during the whole insomnia phase, they're not going to be feeling great ever, likely, but it's going to get better with time and they can monitor their sleep that way. And also, I don't have them choose a bedtime, not to keep a consistent bedtime, keep a consistent wake up time, but let your body decide when you feel ready to sleep, especially when you have insomnia. Because you might not be tired at that time. You might feel a little more stressed, a little bit more anxious. And with time, as you're getting more sleep, if you're going to bed when your body feels ready to sleep, you're going to find your optimal amount of sleep instead of what maybe a sleep tracker tells you or how many hours you think you need. It's like intuitive eating, but for sleep.
I really like that. And so you don't have to have a consistent bedtime. Just whenever your body feels ready. But having a consistent wake-up time is good, even.
Yeah.
So like if you're someone that sleeps in on the weekends just to, you know, because you don't have to wake up for work. So that's probably not a good idea then.
Yeah, I usually recommend staying with a consistent wake-up time. Okay. With time, as you're sleeping better, you do start to get a consistent bedtime. Your body has around the same time that you need every day. And it's going to be similar, but you let your body find that. And some days you may need more sleep. Some days you may need less. And your body will tell you when it's ready.
That's really interesting. And it is kind of like intuitive eating. It's tuning into your body and letting your body, you know, take the reins and decide. And eventually you'll figure out a pattern.
That's great.
Well, before we sign off, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yeah, to never give up hope. Because I know how it feels to feel hopeless. I've worked with many sleep doctors, multiple sleep doctors. I've done 3 rounds of CBTI, which is supposed to be the gold standard for insomnia. I've done everything and nobody was able to help me. I felt hopeless. I fell into a deep, dark place. And 30 years later, I finally figured it out and it does work. There is hope. It is possible. Just because nothing has worked for many years doesn't mean you can't sleep again.
Well, that's a wonderful message. I really liked how you advise people just not to give up hope. You can get into a really dark place when you can't sleep. People do not realize how important it is and how distressing it is. So I appreciate that. And I know a lot of people will appreciate that, just to not give up hope. And it is possible to get a lot of sleep again. Like you said, like your story. It's so many years and now you're sleeping consistently. Yes. It's so wonderful.
Yes.
Well, thank you again. And again, to get in touch with you, you can get in touch with Caitlin through our website, Instagram, and other social media.
Yes.
Okay, great. Great. Well, again, thank you, Caitlin, for joining me on the podcast today, and hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much for having me. This was fun, and definitely come visit Hawaii.
Oh, I will. I'm definitely overdue for a visit. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Susan, you remember the time we were in Orange County? We were driving around and we got lost, and we ran into this place called
Avila's El Ranchito.
You remember the place? The place had awesome decor and authentic margaritas.
Did you know that Avila's El Ranchito has been around since 1966? They have 13 locations throughout Orange County. Visit Salvador Avila's location in Lake Forest and Foothill Ranch for great food, ambiance, and specialty margaritas.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute medical advice. Please consult a physician or other health professional before undertaking changes in lifestyle or wellness habits. The author claims no responsibility to any person or entity for any liability, loss, or damage caused or alleged to be caused directly or indirectly as a result of the use, application, or interpretation of the information presented herein.